A mighty fortress is our God, an exposition of Psalm 46. This message by Pastor Rod Harris was delivered at Trinity Baptist Church on Wednesday evening, September the 7th, 2016.
I'm certain that you've noticed that the world is getting to be a scary place. Sunday, this coming Sunday, is the 15th anniversary of 9/11. And things are not improving. Things are getting increasingly difficult. We have financial crisis. We have escalating rise in health care and insurance. There are job layoffs. All of that serves to strike terror into the hearts of millions. Add to that, every day on the news, we hear about someone else murdered in our city. We read of children being abducted and carjackings. Not to mention, we got the Zika virus to be worried about, and tainted food and polluted water and earthquakes. And all of that together cause us to think about end time scenario. And I, for one, say, even so, come Lord Jesus. It's just not a nice place. We live in a difficult world, and I was joking with someone the other day, and I said, I'm thinking about starting a new church. It's called the Hermit Baptist Church. I'm going to find me a cave and crawl into it. I just want to escape. I want to get away. It's easy to grow weary in well-doing. Sometimes, even serving the Lord, and even knowing His presence, and even being assured of His grace and His mercies and His kindness, we can still grow weary. Sometimes the cares of life are just overwhelming. And when our world comes crashing down around us, we just want to throw in the towel. Martin Luther, the great reformer, often grew weary in his struggles. His struggle to restore biblical Christianity to the church. Often in the face of particular battles, Luther would turn to his trusted friend, Philip of Melanchthon, and say, "Come, Philip, let us sing Psalm 46 together." And so they would sing Luther's version of Psalm 46. A mighty fortress is our God, a bulwark never failing. Our helper, He amid the flood of mortal ills prevailing. For still our ancient foe doth seek to work us woe. His craft and power are great, and armed with cruel hate. On earth is not His equal. Did we in our own strength confide, our striving would be losing. We're not the right man on our side, the man of God's own choosing. Dost ask who that may be? Christ Jesus, it is He. Lord Sabaoth, His name. From age to age, the same. And He must win the battle. And though this world with devils filled should threaten to undo us, we will not fear, for God hath willed His truth to triumph through us. The prince of darkness grim, we tremble not for him. His rage we can endure, for lo, his doom is sure. One little word shall fail him. That word above all earthly powers, no thanks to them abideth. The spirit and the gifts are ours through him who with us sideth. Let goods and kindred go, this mortal life also, the body they may kill. God's truth abideth still. His kingdom is forever. It's our comfort. That's our assurance as the people of God. Luther said, we sing this psalm of praise to God because He is with us and powerfully and miraculously preserves and defends His church and His word against all fanatical spirits, against the gates of hell, against the implacable hatred of the devil, and against all the assaults of the world, the flesh, and sin. There is great comfort, there is great encouragement in the 46th Psalm, and that is our text tonight. We're told in the beginning that this is one of the songs of the sons of Korah, those descendants of Korah who became doorkeepers and custodians of the tabernacle. 11 psalms are attributed to them, and this is one of those. We're not sure about the specific context. We're not given it. We're not told that this is a psalm of the sons of Korah in relation to this or in response to this event. We don't know for sure, but some have suggested that it's in response to God's destruction of the armies of Ammon and Moab, Mount Seir. That was during the time of Jehoshaphat, 2 Chronicles chapter 20. Jehoshaphat appealed to God for help concerning these approaching armies, and God answered that he would fight the battle. And so, in fact, he instructed them, make sure that you position yourselves so that you're out of the way, but can see the way I deliver you. And as Israel watched, those armies, as they approached, turned on each other and destroyed themselves. And God delivered the people. So some say they think it's written in on that occasion. Others suggest that it was the destruction of Sennacherib, the Assyrian king, during the reign of Hezekiah, 2 Kings 18 and 19. We don't know. Could be one of those. It might be something completely different. We don't know, and it doesn't matter. The point is, God alone is our defense. And that ultimately our security doesn't rest in any earthly city or power, but in God and in God alone. Our comfort, our peace, our strength, our safety, our security is the work of our God. As we work our way through it, we're going to discover as believers we find peace and rest at the feet of our sovereign Lord. Let's look together at Psalm 46. It has three stanzas. And we're going to look at each of those stanzas. First, in verses 1 through 3, in times of great distress and trouble, believers find rest in God and in God alone. He is our hope. He is our peace. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth gives way, though the mountains be moved into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble at its swelling. It's clear in the Hebrew text and the way that it's put together, the way it's structured, that God himself is the focus of this hymn. God is the centerpiece. He is the one that is being adored. He is the one that is being worshiped. The psalmist is clear, God and God alone is our refuge. He and no other. Problem is, though he and he alone is our refuge, though he and he alone is our deliverer, nothing else in the universe is capable of being a refuge like him, and yet you and I still haven't learned that. Because when trouble comes, we panic. And we think, if I just had more money, that's all I need. If I just had more money, then I could weather this storm and I could make my way through. The problem is, no matter how much you have, it still isn't enough. Because that's the definition, I think. How much is enough? Just a little bit more. You notice that? You notice that you tend to live on whatever you get? Your standard of living goes up, more income comes in, you spend up to that limit. It's not a matter that, well, we're comfortable right now, so we got all this extra money, so we'll stock that away. No, we spend what we get. Money's never going to be enough. No matter what you have, you'll always wish you had more. Money won't deliver you. But then we think, well, education, if we just were better educated, if we just understood more, if we just trained more, then certainly I could handle it. And that's going to solve everything. If we could just educate our children, if we could just bring everyone's education level up, it'll deliver us. But education won't deliver us either. And you're not going to find the answer in family, friends, or business connections. God and God alone is our refuge. God and God alone is our strength, our peace, our haven, our place of security and rest. The psalmist turns to the Lord. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth gives way, though the mountains be moved into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble and swell. The psalmist speaks of two kinds of help, a stronghold in which we can flee. God is a help in that He is a place of safety, that we can run to Him and we can hide in Him and we can get away from all of that that threatens us. Sometimes our God is a shield who protects us from danger. The battle can rage around us and yet we remain untouched. We see that same kind of thing in Psalm 91 verses 7 and 8. And that is a great comforting truth, that our God is a place of safety, a refuge, a place to hide. But he also speaks of God as a source of inner strength by which we can face calamity. At other times, rather than being a shield, he is the one who gives us strength in the midst of our affliction. We suffer, but we find that our God grants us peace that passes understanding in the midst of our suffering. And there is great peace and an ever-present help in time of trouble, when we know the assuring presence of our God. As the people of God, we're never assured that we're not going to go through heartache. There is no opt-out for the people of God, that if you're a true believer, if you love the Lord, then you'll never get cancer. You'll never be fired. You'll never have wayward children. That we don't have that assurance. As long as we live in a sin-cursed, fallen, broken world, we will travel through heartache and trial. The promise is not that we will be delivered from, but that we will be delivered through every heartache and trouble. Sometimes God is that place of safety and shelter, that we are kept from certain things. There are other times that He is that inner sense of strength and power that enables us to withstand whatever comes our way. And this psalm is clear. He is our help in the midst of the most horrific calamities we can imagine. That's the focus of verse 2 and 3. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth gives way, the mountains be moved into the heart of the sea, the waters roar and foam, and the mountains tremble and swell. Times of great unrest, times when the world is shaken, times when everything in our world comes crashing down around us. But we have peace. Now there's a notation at the end of verse 3. It's off to the side in most translation. It's the word Selah. That's not part of the text. That's not a word for you to read when you're reading through it. It's a musical notation. It's basically the same as a rest. And the purpose of Selah is when you're singing the song, you're supposed to stop there and reflect. You're supposed to stop and give thought to what he just said. So the psalmist is calling on us to stop at this point and give thought to what it means that though the mountains shake and they be tossed into the sea, though the storm is raging about us, our God is a place of safety, a peace, of refuge. Stop and give that some thought. Stop and consider what that means. It means that in the midst of the most horrific struggle you're ever going to face, God is able to provide you a peace that passes understanding. A calm and assurance in the midst of all kinds of chaos and trouble. In times of great distress, believers find rest in God and in Him alone. Second, beginning with verse 4. In times of great distress and trouble, the believer finds God is fully capable of protecting His people. Now note the contrast. Note the contrast. Look at verses 2 and 3 of mountains shaking, being tossed into the sea, the seas tossing and foaming and raging about. Then look at verse 4. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God will help her when morning dawns. The nations rage. The kingdoms totter. He utters his voice, and the earth melts. in contrast to all of that chaos and all of that upheaval in verses 2 and 3, there is this calm, serene place of safety. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God. God is the defender of Jerusalem. In the midst of the chaos of the approaching army, in the face of the threat, there is a perfect peace and safety in the city of God. God is there with his people. Also true that this earthly reference fails to exhaust the meaning of the text, so we understand it in the broader context that it speaks of God's protection of his people through the ages and ultimately the peace and the security of the heavenly Jerusalem. God has promised us peace and rest. Christ himself is our peace and our rest. Why? Because according to verse 7, the Lord of hosts is with us. The Lord of hosts, that's Lord Sabaoth. The God of great power, the God of the great army. He is the commander of the army of Israel, and he's also the commander of the angelic host. Do you remember when Joshua was leading the people of God into the land of conquest, and they were coming up on that first big battle? They're going to go up against Jericho. Now, they're not a trained army. They're a bunch of civilians, slaves that have just come from Egypt. And they have their first task, conquer Jericho. Jericho is a walled city. It is a fortified city. It is a formidable force. And that's who they're going up against. And you remember Joshua went alone to pray. Probably a good thing for him to do. He's going to lead this bunch into battle. He better pray. And as he goes aside to pray, he sees this person dressed in full battle gear. And so Joshua approaches him in chapter 6, and he said, or chapter 5, and he said, "Whose side are you on?" You remember the answer? I'll paraphrase it. "Are you on our side or are you on our enemy's side?" "Neither. I am the commander of the Lord's army." Translation: let me ask you a better question. Whose side are you on? It's not a matter of whether God's on our side or not. It's a matter of whether we're on his side or not. It's whether we're walking in obedience to him. If we're giving ourselves to him, if we're walking in obedience to his will and his command for our life. Or we looked at it just a couple of weeks ago on Sunday evening in 2 Kings 6 when Elisha and his servant were surrounded by those armies. You remember? His servant went out. I don't know if he went out. It was early in the morning, so whether he went to get the morning paper or what, I don't know. He went out and he came back and he said, "Hey, there's an army out there." And you remember Elisha said, "Oh, don't worry about it. There's more with us than with them." And he said, "I don't." The old man's lost it. "Because they're just us." And he said, "Lord, open his eyes." And he told him to look again, and there was that great army behind the army. Lord Sabaoth. Our peace, our security, is in the God who delivers. A God of great power, and he is capable of protecting his people. Third, starting at verse 8, in times of great distress and trouble, the believer humbly bows before God, his conqueror and king. "Come, behold the works of the Lord, how he has brought desolation on the earth. He makes wars cease to the end of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the chariot with fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress." Come and behold the works of the Lord. stop and consider the power, the majesty, and the working of our God. See, our problem when trial comes, the problem when heartache strikes, when the telephone rings and you answer it and the doctor says, "Just wanted to call you, we got the test result, it is malignant." Or the boss calls you in and says, "We're having layoffs today. And just wanted you to know you're no longer employed." The problem is when those storms blow in and the heartache comes and the trial comes, the problem is too often that's the only thing we can see. And the psalmist here is calling us to step back and survey the whole scene and behold the mighty workings of our God. To stop looking at this problem in itself and start seeing that in light of the greater work of God and His faithfulness and His provision year after year, decade upon decade, as you have walked with Him and you've experienced His mighty touch. Stop and consider the work of our God. Then notice he goes on to say, He makes wars to cease to the ends of the earth. He brings peace. But here's what you need to understand about this peace that God brings. It is not a negotiated peace. It's not a matter that God says to his enemies, "Let's see if we can't work this out and come to some kind of agreement that benefits both of us." He breaks the bow. He, by the force of his person and his will, brings peace. It's not negotiated. It's not a mutual thing. It is a call to the end of hostility by the power of God and the power of God alone. Now, why does that matter? It matters because you turn the page to verse 10. And I suspect many of us have found great comfort and peace in verse 10. And we use it often, but most often we use it in the wrong context. Look at it. "Be still and know that I am God." See, we tend to think of that as such a comforting thing. Just stop and realize that God is God. What's the context? Context is God bringing an end to hostility. The context is God breaking the bow. The context is God bringing victory. Verse 10 is a call to surrender. "Be still and know that I am God" is a call for you to stop and confess that He and He alone is God. You are not. That's the context. It is comforting, but it's comforting when we understand that we unconditionally surrender to a God of all power and all authority and all might. He is sovereign. He is Lord. He rules over all. Therefore, we do not fear. Therefore, we find peace. Life is often the pits. It's full of trouble, trial, and heartache. But we are told to fear not because Christ has overcome the world. We are told, fear not and take refuge in the God who conquers all. He is our refuge. He is our fortress. He and He alone is our peace.
You've been listening to a Plowman podcast. The Plowman features the preaching ministry of Rod Harris, pastor of Trinity Baptist Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma, located at the corner of 41st and Union. To learn more about the ministries at Trinity, visit us on the web at www.tbctulsa.org.